Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is TV Take, Variety's television podcast. I'm Daniel Holloway. This week, we talk with Bruno Heller, executive producer of Epix's Pennyworth. Stay tuned. Bruno Heller, thank you for doing this.
Great pleasure to be here.
So you've got Pennyworth coming up on Epix, which explores the story of Alfred Pennyworth, who we know as Batman's butler.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like... At first, a fairly narrow niche mm-hmm. of the Batman story to dive into in the mm-hmm. form of a series. What made you confident that there was a lot there to explore?
Well, firstly, from a personal point of view, really the only DC characters I'm interested in are the real people, and there's not many of them. Gotham, which I just finished, was obviously about... Commissioner Gordon, as he became, and young Bruce Wayne, and those are two human beings with no superpowers. And moving forward into the future, you know, a lot of people put it, you know, did they want you to do Captain Boomerang? But in fact, you know, to a degree, I would have liked to have done Alfred before Gotham, because Alfred is an extremely well-known mythic character that nobody really knows the backstory of. So there's a great amount of leeway to tell any kind of story you want. It was also a way to tell a story in a completely new part of the DC universe, which is London in the early 60s. And that, my very early childhood was in this world that we're looking at, or rather real London, not the pretend London we're in. So for all those reasons, and the fact that Sir Michael Caine insisted that his Alfred was an SAS soldier, meant that there was a real story to be told, just with the sort of simple question of how does a SAS soldier become a butler? That's a strange journey. And how did he get from London to America? And then once started thinking about what kind of world London would be in a DC universe, it opened up all kinds of great possibilities, because it can't be like the American DC world, because there's no superheroes in England. English people can't wear spandex. There has been no successful British superhero in the history of comics. A Union Jack is the only one I can think of, and there was nobody is hoping for a Union Jack revival.
We'll get there.
I mean, I could go on. The niche aspect of the character is again what attracted to me, because you can tell a simple story. I mean, one of the challenges making Gotham was it rapidly became a kind of carnival pageant with, you know, there's so many great characters and the pressure to put all of them in there as quickly as possible was, you know, understandable and very strong. But in retrospect, I would say to the detriment of storytelling, because it becomes like one life to live. You have seven powerful storylines all running at the same time.
And here you're working with Epix rather than working with a U.S. broadcaster, where the pressures and the demands of your network partner are, I imagine, completely different. So were those conversations that, you know, you and the folks at Warner Brothers had with them in terms of how you wanted to pace this story? And like, look, we are not, you know, I'm assuming that we're not going to see the Riddler pop up in episode four.
Exactly. it was a chance both to tell, I mean, it's hard to parse the difference between adult and kind of not adult entertainment, but being on a premium cable station means that there is a duty to find the edge of the material, to give people something they haven't seen before. And people don't want to see the DC show that they have seen before or they might expect. You have to surprise them. You have to give them genuine adult themes and character. And within WB and with Epix, we talked about that a great deal before we got into it. And it was always intended. I wouldn't have done this show in any other format. It couldn't be a broadcast show, because you would be forced into a kind of hijinks, Avengers style. Oh, I mean, Patrick McNee Avengers style adventure. And this is much more of a family drama and character based.
That said, you have Alfred is central to the show. Mm. You have Thomas and Martha Wayne in the show.
Mm.
So how do you walk the line between creating what, at least in the early episodes, looks very much like a British spy drama in that tradition, and not very much like a superhero show, with the idea that most people who look at this thing, they want some bit of Batman?
Well, people don't always get what they want. But sometimes they get what they need. From my point of view, you can't worry too much about that, because creatively, you want to be as free as possible. And it's precisely that these characters, as much as people know them, I don't think people have a very firm and kind of religious notion of who Thomas or Martha Wayne should be, for instance. They're kind of blank slates. So we're not betraying some long-held iconic notion of who those people should be. I would assure people, if they are worried, that Thomas does eventually become a doctor, but he's not at this moment. And even then, if they have those notions, it's better to surprise them and challenge them than simply give them exactly what they expected. And the freedom to work with those characters is what attracted me to it. You know, they're only known for their deaths, really. What I'd say to people who want a bit of Batman in it is that you don't really understand anyone until you've met their parents. And they will meet Batman's parents. And in the portrayal of those two people, we were very aware of that lineage, and we kind of explain in their characters the two sides of the character that make up Batman, because there's a kind of dutiful Apollonian side, which is Thomas, and an impulsive, vengeful, fearless side, which is Martha. And those two DNAs come together. And part of the fun is seeing these two people who really don't look like they should be together. That's the advantage of stories where people know the end. And one of the problems as well with all of the Batman and these mythic stories, when people know the end of the story, you have to take a completely different approach to how you're telling the story, obviously.
And I would imagine, in telling the story of Alfred, I mean, you are also in some way doing what you're talking about with the portrayal of Thomas and Martha, in the sense that, you know, these were Bruce's parents, but Alfred is the person who raised him. And so it makes sense that this would be someone who, you know, when you think of him as, you know, anything, sort of any incarnation of Alfred prior maybe to the Nolan movies was always just this sort of like cartoon version of an English butler, right? Mm-hmm. But like what Kane hinted at and what you seem to be diving into is that this is a guy who like understands, you know, violence and the world in a way that, you know, Bruce Wayne eventually comes to.
Yeah, and the other thing that the Nolans and Kane added to it, which is much more true to the actual life of a butler, is that butlers are working class. And in part of the British class system, in a very kind of weird halfway point, you know, Jeremy Irons is not a butler. There's no posh butlers. So that was absolutely part of the storytelling, and, you know, the mystery of how he got from where he is to where he's going, what inspired that loyalty to the Wayne family. That's something that we will explore. We were very lucky to get Jack Bannon to play the part, because, and there was some discussion at the beginning about, does this guy seem too soft and baby-faced to be that character? But, you know, because the other way to go is to make him an obvious tough guy, sort of Jason Statham, man of action character. And we wanted to tell a story about someone who is genuinely conflicted, as Batman eventually is, about what his talent is. He's a young soldier. His talent is violence, but it's also the thing that he wants to get as far away from as possible. The trouble with violence is it's addictive. As part of the research into it, I was reading Sebastian Junger's book about soldiers with PTSD. And the actual hardcore combat soldiers are not haunted. I mean, this is a generalization, but they're not haunted by the terrible things they've done. They're haunted by the boredom of regular life, and they miss the adrenaline rush of being close to death. That's what drives them mad, not that they're mad, but that's what drives them to the edge, not a revulsion at it, but a terrible love-hate of it.
What were some of the other things that you looked at in terms of research? And also, you know, as we said before, this is in many ways in the tradition of British spy novels and spy movies. So what were some of the, in addition to some of the research material, what were some of the narrative things that you were looking at as, you know, maybe like points of reference or inspiration?
Funnily, I mean, people characterize it as spy genre, but I never really thought of that. It was the luxury of having an alternative history, and it's a very alternative history of England, is that it allowed me to create a nascent civil war. And what I looked at a lot was both the American Civil War and the British Civil War in the much earlier. And the salient and intriguing point about both of those conflicts is that it pitted brother against brother and members of families against their closest relatives and friends against friend, and almost impossible to tell where the fault lines lay. And many people were stuck in the middle and didn't know what side to choose. And that creates the kind of intrigues and betrayals and espionage and broken trust that are the fodder of good storytelling. So I looked into that a lot. And beyond that, like I say, it's kind of, that's the England of my early childhood. It's basically the England of my early childhood, but as if certain aspects of the liberal revolution had not happened. So there's still hangings, there's still gibbets on the street, there's still torture. And there's other things I avoided because I didn't want to make it. I think the easy thing to do would have made it to make it a kind of parallel of modern politics and comment on the modern world. You know, racism, sexism, all of those isms. But there you kind of have to, this day and age, you're sort of forced to take sides. And one of the other things I like about this is, as much as the far right, who we call the Raven Society, are the bad guys, there's good and bad on both sides. And precisely as the story unfolds, it's difficult to tell, difficult to say who's right and who's wrong all the time. And that's hard to do unless you create a world in which people can dissociate themselves from their own modern sensibility.
Was that part of the fun or the appeal of doing this, this idea of, because you have a superhero universe, even if it's one that, where we don't have superheroes, you can then play with what 1960s London looked like. You can have an England where the liberal revolution never took place, because those things are really jarring in this show when we first see them, because we're used to, say, Batman stories where it's like, this is a hyper-realistic version of Batman. If you took Chicago and dropped Batman into it at 4 p.m., that's a Nolan movie, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. The freedom that you get, both in sort of spectacle in terms of giving the audience new sensations, that alternative world is great. And it also means that you have much more freedom in the writing of what can happen. You can be shocking and unrealistic in ways that accuracy to the period would, you know, London in 1962 was kind of a grim, sad, depressed place. The notion that of swinging London, even when it was at the height of its swingingness, was, you know, there were 50 people in Chelsea who were having a swing in time. Everybody else was, you know, sniffing glue and sitting on the tube. So, yeah, being able to make it a glamorous, heightened, sexy, even surreal version of that world was key. And being out, that meant you could put in people like the famous Satanist Aleister Crowley. It means you can put in the ancestors of Jack the Ripper. Because those folkloric mythical heroes in English culture are kind of the equivalent of the superheroes of American culture. And they're also characters that people in America and around the world are familiar with. So we'll keep playing with those sort of tropes, as well as bringing in what people call the Easter eggs. I've never understood why they call them Easter eggs. Easter eggs are sort of horrible, bad chocolate with a plastic toy inside. Yeah, for those reasons, I don't think I would have wanted to do a straight up 1960s period drama, just because, yeah, to be accurate to it, it's not a glamorous or exciting world.
You spent a good chunk of your recent career on a Batman story, and now you're making another one. And if this is successful, you will end up having spent an enormous amount of your career on Batman stories.
Yeah.
What was appealing about that prospect, and did you have concerns?
Yeah, that's a good question. My career arc has gone from Antony and Cleopatra to Batman's butler, which looks sort of like a downhill run. And I was concerned, and it still does concern me, because frankly, I'm not, you know, I always feel slightly out of place at Comic-Con, because I really don't know about, you know, the deep mythology of any of these comic book characters. We didn't have, you know, American comics didn't get to England in bulk until the 80s. I like to work. I'd rather be working on any damn thing than developing or going out pitching. As soon as it, you know, my first response when they said, "How about Pennyworth?" It was as if someone said, "How about Captain Boomerang?" But then, you know, I thought about all the things that we've just been talking about and realized, actually, no, this is a great character. Regardless of the DC connection, regardless of the Batman connection, it's a great story to tell. And I could immediately see the opportunities to create this surreal version of a city I know and love. and characters I know and love. It's the first time in my career that I've been able to write in English. I'd never written any kind of English character before, except obviously Alfred on Gotham. So that was a plus as well. And, you know, these days, looking at the market from a business point of view, if you don't have some kind of IP or some kind of very challenging material that will create a lot of buzz and controversy or huge stars, then it's a very tough market. So it's always better to have something that people at least know the name of. We couldn't have done Rome if it wasn't about Antony and Cleopatra and Caesar. There's 1,000 great Roman stories to tell, but if Cleopatra ain't in it, well, so for all those reasons, I decided to do this. I mean, I won't do Captain Boomerang. I did this one on the understanding with Warner Brothers that the next thing would be not as far as possible away from it. I love this show and I love this material, and I'm deeply grateful for the time I've spent with DC and Warner Brothers. But yeah, the next thing I do won't be in this genre. The other thing is obviously that, you know, old white guys like me have to look to our mortality in this business. It would be foolish to think that, I could, and, you know, the next thing I'm going to do will be, oh, this is fresh and shocking and new. No one's seen it before. But on the other hand, you know, that's not what people are necessarily looking for in the market, and it would be foolish not to recognize that, yeah, it's a bit like old screenwriters and directors had to look at themselves when Easy Rider came out, you know? Doesn't matter how good you are or what great stories you have to tell, when there's a sea change like that and this, you'd be a fool not to, okay, I'd better, you know, you need to find ways to keep in the game.
So then when you look at whatever the next thing is for you, how much do you feel, given how much the marketplace has changed? And I mean, and let's put on the table what we're talking about. Like, you know, there's a lot of energy right now behind creators who are women and people of color, and you know, essentially people who have not long had the door open to them to create stuff, especially on this scale. So then do you have to change the type of, you know, one tack obviously is to take something like Pennyworth and like create something unexpected out of that, you know, what is a known property. But then when you look at other ways to approach it, how much do you have to push yourself outside of your own comfort zone?
For me, I don't feel like it's out of my comfort zone at all, because, that would be sort of self-serving, but I've always written very strong female characters. If you look at all the shows I've done, it would be hard to say that women are given short shrift in terms of their voice or the power that they have. As far as the for want of a better word, the race element goes, diversity, that's just a great opportunity, because frankly the inertia has been corporate inertia, business inertia. It's been difficult to cast minorities in, you know, pivotal roles that people have in their head are not diverse. For instance, on Pennyworth, I suggested that Martha could be a woman of color. Now, if I'd said that, you know, 3 years ago, people would have said, yeah, that's a great idea. And, well, they wouldn't have said it's a great idea. They would have just said, no, she's Batman's mum. She's an Anglo-Saxon or something. But at this point, they said, oh, yeah, okay. Now, she isn't, but we did have women of color coming in to play the part with the real possibility that they might get it. As long as it doesn't become a kind of a quota or an imperative, then it's a great thing. I would, you know, well, I was about to say I don't want to be controversial, but I don't mind being controversial. I think you have to draw a distinction between diversity and, for want of a better word, sexism, because it's a rewriting or a misunderstanding of history to say that there have been no powerful women in Hollywood. The most powerful people in Hollywood have been women at various times. Lucille Ball, Shonda Rhimes, I know people say, what? Mae West, incredibly powerful woman. Olivia de Havilland, Bette Davis. In terms of in the executive offices, less so. And in terms of directors, also less so. But many great female writers that have been not been given enough credit. On the one hand, it's a sea change that you get more people in, but it's also a forgetting of history. That it's always been possible for women to succeed in the business. They have to be strong, tough-skinned, and brilliant. But that's true of everyone in the business. Don't include myself in that. But yeah.
We were talking before we started recording about the sort of whether there was still a division in the town between the TV people and the movie people. And I'm wondering, as someone who has sort of lived through the peak TV revolution and is now, sort of firmly established as someone who can survive in it, do you still see the, for lack of a better word, snobbery in town when we talk about TV?
You certainly see it from from movie executives. I think they're living in a kind of dream world, because clearly TV is the place to be. It's where all the really creative new things are happening. Movies have become very stale is the wrong word, but and formulaic and kind of, it's like building a skyscraper. They're far too elaborate and big and have so many people have to be involved to create them. And it's such a disappointment to everyone if they're not blockbusters. There's very, very little creativity left in big movies. And, you know, it's always a surprise and people are overjoyed when they get one of those tentpole movies that actually has some intelligence and wit and freshness behind it. So yeah, for me, let them be snobby about it if they want. Also, it's that's where the movie stars are, and still people who've been in this town for a long time can get drunk on the notion of being involved with the big names. But as you're increasingly seeing, the big names would rather be in a TV series than in yet another movie, which, apart from anything else, no one has any control over those movies once they're started. They just happen. And, you know, however much you're paid, you suddenly find yourself in some, whatever you want to describe, piece of shit. You're stuck. And so you're building these massive edifices that might be made out of crud. Whereas a TV show, you can actually have input. It's much more like theater. You can respond to the audience. You have time to develop the character and find new ways to go. In every respect, it's a better creative place to be. And, you name the big movie star, I would tell them, get the hell out of that business and get into TV, because TV is, I think that, you know, a lot of these platforms will drop away. There won't be as many things made because right now it's all loss leaders. And people have seen that you can do a huge TV show that disappears like into a swamp, like no one ever saw it. It didn't exist. Once that sort of stuff is sorted out, then it's obviously a better place to be.
Bruno, thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with Brandi Rhodes and Cody Rhodes of All Elite Wrestling.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.